is Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game, AFC Championship Tuesday. It's so nice to say that. And it'll be nice tomorrow to say AFC Championship Wednesday. Feels like we've come a long way when we started this show and the Titans were picking first in the NFL draft.
You don't get this opportunity every day. Need to enjoy it.
Titans in the AFC title game. The Saints are not. I mean, it is pretty amazing to think of the teams that are sitting at home right now. Seattle with Russell Wilson, they're sitting at home. New Orleans, Sean Payton, they're sitting at home. New England, Bill Belichick, they're sitting at home. The league MVP, Lamar Jackson, he's sitting at home. The Steelers are sitting at home. I mean, there are some good teams out there that are sitting at home. Everybody in your division is sitting at home. It's pretty wild to see. Hey, you're one of the four final teams left to go. And Sean Payton was the guest analyst for ESPN on Sunday Countdown. And they were talking about the Titans team. Now, this is a Titans team that the Saints beat towards the end of the season. Now, that was without Derrick Henry. But Sean Payton was asked about the Titans, and this is what Sean Payton said.
This is a team you beat on the road in Week 16, not so long ago. So what'd you see from this team last night?
Well, look, they're the sixth seed that no one wants a part of right now. And when we beat them, and it was a good team, but we beat them without Henry, the running back. And when you watch them right now, you see a closer. They get up on you, and all of a sudden the Ravens are playing a game that they're not used to playing all season. So I think they've got as good a chance as any of being one of those teams to travel, and then make the final trip to South Florida.
What do you think about what Sean Payton said right there, that he believes the Titans have the kind of team with a closer in Derrick Henry to be able to travel and then play the final trip in South Florida? What do you make of that? Are there certain teams that travel well and you don't want to play in the playoffs? What do you make of what he said?
I mean, to be honest, I think he was just being kind.
Talking on TV?
Yeah, just TV talk, which any team, you know, I think the insert name here is a team that travels well, and, you know, they would have said the same about just about anybody. I mean, there's four teams left, all four of these teams. I don't care who you're talking about. You're saying, you know, we're probably the least known, least respected, I guess, of the teams that are out there. And so, you know, if you want to try to be kind, say something nice, because he would have certainly said the same kind of thing about the rest of the teams.
Would he have said that about Green Bay? Would he have said, hey, Bay is a team nobody wants to play, and with that quarterback, they can – I mean, maybe I just hate the Green Bay coach. I don't know. I don't look at the Green Bay Packers as some really good team. I look at the Green Bay Packers as the kind of team that make it to the championship game, and then you forget that they were ever there.
Championship game with
like
a rookie coach.
A lot of Andy Reid's Eagles teams were just so forgettable when they got – I'm hoping that this isn't like the Titans get to the AFC title game, and 3 years from now nobody remembers the fact that the Titans were in an AFC title game. That's what I think Green Bay is this year. Like, they'll forget, oh, yeah, Green Bay was in it that year that San Francisco went. But I think he brought up the fact that the Titans put Baltimore in a game that they're not used to playing. And I think that's the highlight there, is that with Derrick Henry, you put a team into a game that they're not used to playing, and then all of a sudden they start looking at that clock and they're down by 14 or something, and they see Derrick Henry running off 7, 9, whatever, and all of a sudden it makes opposing teams uncomfortable because they see what Derrick Henry's capable of.
Yeah, I mean, from that standpoint, you know, if you're a team like them, I mean, the worst thing that could happen to them is just exactly what happened. And the best thing that could happen to us is just what happened. So, you know, count your blessings. But, had anything about that game been much different one way or the other, I mean, I'm not sure the results would have been the same.
Texter into the text line says, if you don't think the Ravens are a physical football team, it shows how little you know about football. That's in reference to me. I'm sorry. I did not think the Ravens were that physical of a football team when the Titans pushed them on both sides of the line, just pushed them wherever they wanted to go. And I know the Titans pushed New England, but I think the Titans pushed Baltimore way more than they pushed New England.
Well, I think it's a matter of, you know, how you want to determine it. I mean, from our standpoint, it's just fantastic that we were able to do that. I mean, and again, I'll give credit to both sides of the line of scrimmage. I mean, I think you have to be thrilled about both. And the defensive line that we haven't seen take over a lot of games, you know, got to a point where I'm not going to say they took it over, but they were certainly a key factor. And of course, the offensive line did more or less take it over. I mean, that offensive line, the change that we've been through with that offensive line over the last few weeks is just incredible.
So Sean Payton talked about travel, travel, travel. Do you believe that, especially where the weather changes, Foxborough was different than Baltimore, which will be different than cold Kansas City. Do you believe that when he says that they travel, that he's talking about the run game and the defense? Because I've heard a lot of people say the passing game doesn't travel like the running game travels and things like that. Is that what he meant by the travel, travel, and travel on to South Florida?
I think that's part of it. And I think, too, it's how you adjust to just travel in general. And I'm going to guess that Mike has done a good job of getting these guys so focused that, you know, it's the old we'll play anytime, anywhere. You know, just let us know, we'll be there. And they're going to go into this game the same way. You know, just thinking, hey, we got everything to win, nothing to lose. Go for it.
Do you buy that, though, that Sean Payton thinks that that's a positive and that he thinks that other teams don't do that as well? Or I don't know. See, the way I looked at it with Sean Payton is Sean Payton is talking about the Titans. And this is my takeaway, too, from that Saints game, was the fact that they had a chance to win the game had Jerome Boger's crew not screwed it up without Derrick Henry. Like, against a Hall of Fame quarterback, maybe the best receiver in the NFL, but they had a shot to win the game without Derrick Henry. And I think Sean Payton's looking at it like, hey, I mean, I know we beat them, but we were hanging on for dear life against them, and they didn't have Derrick Henry. So we don't want a piece of them, and nobody else should want a piece of them either because they're that good of a football team.
Yeah, I mean, that very well could be.
But you didn't get that same takeaway from the Saints game that I did you?
No.
Like, I walked out of that Saints game, and I was like, they almost beat the New Orleans Saints without Derrick Henry.
Yeah,
that's pretty daggone impressive.
Although I think maybe when we got in the playoffs, we found out that may not be as impressive as we thought at that point.
Did they beat the Saints?
Yeah, that the Saints.
I see. I think the Saints just had a bad game against Minnesota. Now, they may have gone to Green Bay. They may have gone to Green Bay and lost, which usually old quarterback in Lambeau Field is a dome guy. Like, sure. But I just thought the Saints just had a bad game. Now, I still think that the fact that they had a shot to beat the Saints without Derrick Henry says something. And that's where I think Sean Payton gets kind of the positivity that he sees out of the Titans. Let's go to your phone. 615-737-1025. Carl is up next on Jared and the GM. What's up, Carl?
Hey, man. Look, fellas. Bottom line is Mahomes is going to score, okay? All we can do and pray to the good Lord above is that we hold them to field goals, okay? And look, this is going to sound crazy, but ever since we signed Greg Joseph, we've been the best red zone team in football, okay? I think he might be our lucky charm because he's not even attempted one since we've signed him. And once we get inside the 20, I mean, it's a guaranteed touchdown since he's been there, okay? But if we've got to hold them to field goals. I mean, this ain't Baltimore. This ain't New England.
You don't think you needed to hold New England to field goals?
What'd you say?
I said you don't think you needed to hold New England to field goals?
Yeah, but, I mean, Brady ain't nothing compared to Mahomes, man. Mahomes is he's the league for the next 15 years. You know what I'm saying?
I don't disagree with what you're saying, but you're acting like they got to hold this team to field goals, whereas the other teams, you know, they're not the same. Didn't have to hold them to field goals. I'm like, won those games because you held them to field goals.
Yeah, but look, Brady, I mean, he was over the hill, and plus he didn't have nobody to catch the ball, okay? And Baltimore is just Baltimore. I mean, like I say, I mean, if you can
14-2, best team in the league?
Floyd said the perfect thing earlier. He's like, you can scheme up a way to stop a running team, okay? But you cannot, just like he said, that he's perfect with it. You cannot scheme a way to stop somebody that can just throw it all over the yard like Mahomes can. The only thing we can do is they're going to get their points. We just got to hold them to three instead of seven. Okay, and that's it. But look, will y'all please just leave me on the line where I can listen to what y'all say because I'm in a...
Sure.
I'm in.
So I would say, as far as the Titans are concerned, about holding Kansas City to field goals, yes. But they had to hold the other teams to field goals, too. Like, that's been the difference in all of these games is you get to the red zone, you score touchdowns, they get to your red zone, they kick field goals.
Well, they have that's one of the areas we have been just outstanding at. And I'm not sure I know – I'm smart enough to know exactly why. I just look at the results, and they are there. And if you can keep this team to kicking field goals, then I agree with Carl. You're going to be in pretty good shape now. You know, keeping them to field goals, that may be a problem. But I mean, it's going to be important. It's a four-point swing for us every time out because our offense has been – I mean, that was one of the things we talked about this last game. We're 3-3. We're 3-for-3 in the red zone. They were 1-for-4.
I think the reason that you're so much better in the red zone is I think your lines are getting great push. So when they're trying to run the ball into the end zone and your line pushes their line back, then Rashawn Evans or David Long Jr. or whatever gets a clear shot at the running back. And I think that's a big deal. And then when you're there, your line is pushing them back. And then you got the big old beast. And then, I mean, the Titans have athletic pass catchers. I mean, it's like the Titans front, the Titans defensive front that's getting a bunch of push, right? Think about the talent on the big fat guys on the defensive line for the Titans. You have Jarrell Casey, who's a Pro Bowler, multi-time Pro Bowler, probably a Titans Ring of Honor kind of guy, right?
Could be.
Okay, next to him, you have a first-round pick, Jeffrey Simmons. Then you have a second-round pick in Austin Johnson and a second-round pick, I think, in Daquan Jones. That's all second-round guys. That's all first- and second-round players. That's why. What's your offensive line got? First-round pick. First-round pick, I don't know what Ben Jones was, but he's been signed to two contracts.
Fourth or fifth.
Okay. Third-round pick, first-round pick. That's why, you know, you have all these high-drafted guys that finally are playing like it. 615-737-1025 is the phone number, 615-737-1025. Floyd's been to the AFC title game. Floyd's won it. Floyd's won it out of the wild card round to win the AFC championship game. Does this road the Titans have to go? Brady, Lamar, Mahomes. Does this remind him of the 99 team? We'll discuss next, as well as more of your phones. Jared and the GM. It's ESPN 1025 The Game, live from the wholesaling studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's ESPN 1025 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
I think you have to realize kind of where we've come from and how we've gotten to this point and realize that it's actually worked, that our belief in this team and this belief in what we're doing, the confidence in which we're playing with, the preparation in the meetings and on the practice field, the execution during the games and the ability to build momentum throughout the week and try to ignore some of the noise that happens outside this building is what's gotten to this point, not about what lies on the other side.
That was Mike Vrabel on the AFC title game. Floyd, you had to go a road for the AFC title game where you had to go through Buffalo at home in the playoffs. You needed the Music City Miracle. Then Peyton Manning in Indianapolis. And nobody thought you guys could beat 13-3 Indianapolis. I mean, 13-3, first round bye. Peyton Manning, Edgerrin James was the league's rushing champion. They didn't think you guys had a prayer. Then you won that game. Kind of like Lamar Jackson. No one thought that the Titans could win that game. They did. Then it's Jacksonville, 14-2. Now, you'd already beat them during the regular season twice, but you beat this Kansas City Chiefs team already during the regular season. Floyd, does this team remind you of the 99 run and how it kind of all played out? And what were some similarities and some differences between the two teams?
Well, I think the similarities, you know, are fairly obvious. I mean, I think we went into that first wild card game against Buffalo kind of feeling our way. You know, I'm not sure we were ready to kick the door in as much as we were working our butts off and, you know, trying to go into the game to play the absolute best we could. And I think we saw a little bit of that. Now, when we got to Indy, of course, I mean, Indy was the Baltimore of then. Baltimore from the standpoint of, you know, the offense and Peyton and Edge and those guys that were really prolific. We went up there, I think, surprised them and a lot of people with, you know, the fan support we got. Eddie had a great game. Eddie had a big play for us, and we end up winning that. So, you know, you're probably similar there. And when we got to the championship game, I mean, we were facing a 14-2 team. We'd just beaten a 13-3. Now we're facing a 14-2. And the only two games they'd lost were to us. And no team in the league had ever beaten a team three times in the same year. And so there was a lot of talk about, you know, you can't do it, you won't do it, you can't. And then I've probably told you this story, but when we went to Jacksonville, then all the stories came out about how they'd already gotten their Super Bowl, you know, hotel. They'd gotten their rental cars with the names on them, so they knew everybody who was going to have a car, and, you know, which was probably just good preparation. But to a football team, you know, that was a little bit out of character. We didn't like that. And went into that game and got a couple of, you know, we got a safety, which kind of set it going. And then D. Mace returned the free kick for a touch. And once that happened, I mean, we were on the move then.
I think that where I guess I'm really reminded of it is the Baltimore-Indianapolis thing. That, I think, is a fair comparison. I think this Kansas City team, like the gap between Kansas City and this Titans team is much bigger than the gap between Jacksonville and that Titans team. Because that Titans team had not only beaten Jacksonville in a close kind of freaky game on the road, but they had crushed that Jacksonville team at home. I mean, you couldn't have more confidence. They crushed Jacksonville at home in December and then go there late January. I mean, that's hard to overcome. But to your point, you got, I mean, it was a really weird game, AFC title game. It was very fluky, you know, fumbles here. Like, it was weird. And then all of a sudden, Frank Wycheck fumbles. Ball goes to the one-yard line. Josh Evans sacks Brunell for a safety. The Titans go up, I think, by three at that point or four or something. And then D. Mace takes the free kick to the house, and now it's an 11-point lead. And at that point, Jacksonville knew what was coming. Coughlin knew what was coming. Jacksonville knew what was coming.
Crowd that was so loud. I mean, it was, and that place was full, and that stadium is big, because back then they didn't have all the tarps and stuff on it, you know, so it was a real deal. And I'm going to tell you what it looked like, you know, that you could just see the fans emptying out of that place.
They
couldn't get to it fast enough.
Sounds like what we heard happen Saturday night in Baltimore, with the way
everybody's,
those fans.
Everybody's gone.
And it was, late in the game, Titans are looking to put it away. And you know that feeling where you're looking for the kill shot, and then Steve McNair takes a pass, or Steve McNair on a play action just runs right up the middle for like a gain of 50 to the one-yard line, and that was the ball game. I mean, once you had that, I bet that was probably the moment where everybody grabbed their jacket and headed for the exit. Let's go to your phones. Let's go to Ray, who's up next on the Titans. Thank you for calling. What's up, Ray?
Viva los Titanes! Long live Titans. The problem with this is that Baltimore Ravens was super conceited. They thought that they were going to beat up on the Titans, and they failed to understand that the Titans is a team that is cohesive, is playing together, respect the coach, want to play ball for their coach, and we will beat Kansas City again.
Thank you for the call, Ray.
I love it.
I just don't believe that as much. Like, Baltimore knew, you know, hey, Tennessee's good, but I think deep down inside they thought that the Titans couldn't beat them. They thought we're too good. Like, we've been dominant all year. We haven't lost in September. You know, if we play our game, we will beat the Titans. I think Kansas City's confident they'll beat the Titans, but I think Kansas City knows, hey, if we screw up, we will lose, because we've lost to them already twice. I mean, we lost to them in the playoffs 2 years ago when their team stunk, and they came in here, and we were up 18 points at halftime and lost the game. And then we went there, had them on the ropes for 40 minutes of that game, and then lost the game on a blocked field goal. I mean, I worry that Kansas City is too open to the idea that the Titans can beat them only because the Titans have beat them in the past.
Well, I think they're selling the other way.
Really?
Yeah, I think they're selling, you know.
We screwed up. We'll kick their butt.
Yeah, well, we're not going to kick their butt, but, you know, people are going to be saying, yep, they beat us, but we lost the game. You know, we were the ones that messed up on the field goal. We were the ones that had the field goal blocked. We were the ones that gave them a fumble that they returned for a touchdown. Imagine what that game would have been like if we had just skipped those three mess ups right there, just those three. That's 21 points, you know? I mean, we would have killed them. And so, you know, they're going to I think they'll come into this game with a little bit of bounce in their step. I mean, and plus you're going to the Super Bowl. I mean, this is...
I know, but sometimes too much bounce is the problem.
This game is the most exciting and the least rewarding.
There is no trophy for having got to the AFC Championship game.
Because you get there, and if you win it, you are on to the Super Bowl. You made it to the dance. If you lose it, nobody remembers you. Nobody remembers you were in the championship game last year. You don't get anything for the championship game. You know, from that standpoint, you may as well lose in a wild card. I mean, you get the same things for it. So, you know, it's one of those hollow. The loss in the championship games always hurt me more than the loss in the Super Bowls, because you're absolutely nothing. You're just blown away into obscurity again. You know, starting all over.
Let's go to Chad, who's up next on the Chiefs. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Chad.
2 points to make. I've been listening to y'all media guys. Y'all fall in love with these high-flight offenses every year. They're always the highlights on ESPN, and everybody talks about them. And then you get surprised when they get beat by an old-school running team that controls the clock, because they can't score all those points if you got the ball in your hands and they're sitting on the bench. So that's the first point I want to make. But I want to ask you a question, Jared. Who's got the best two defenses in the remaining four teams?
San Francisco and Green Bay.
Okay. Well, then one of those teams are definitely going to the Super Bowl, because obviously that's both of the NFC teams. Floyd, let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
What wins championships?
Who, say again?
What wins championships?
Oh, defense.
There
defense running the game. Running
there you
the ball.
Go. I'll hang it up. Thanks.
Okay, now I'll make the other argument. You know what else wins games, especially deep playoff games? Quarterbacks. And I'm not knocking Tannehill, because I think Tannehill is good. But they've got the guy. It's funny. This is the first AFC title game in 17 years that hasn't featured Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, or Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
You know who the two quarterbacks were the last time the AFC title game didn't feature one of those guys?
McNair
and Rich Gannon. So those are the two quarterbacks who started the game the last time that it wasn't Brady, Manning, or Big Ben. Well, guess what? Big Ben's probably done. Manning is done. Brady, I don't know. But Brady may get back, I don't know. But I'll argue that there will be another set of quarterbacks at some point that are constantly at the top of the AFC, and this guy's one of them. So I understand. Defense wins championships. You can't rush the quarterback. Like, you cannot sack the QB unless you think Kamale Correa is going to play out of his mind. And Correa's been playing well. But unless you think that Kamale Correa all of a sudden is going to lead the Titans to the Super Bowl, I mean, you have to take this with a grain of salt. I understand the cliche, but at the same time, quarterbacks are usually what gets you through this time of the year, which is why Drew Brees always makes the playoffs and Tom Brady is always here and all these great quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, etc. And they got the guy. Like, they have the guy. And so that's what worries me as far as the cliche is concerned about. Well, defense wins championships. I mean, if you look statistically, I think all three teams have better statistical defenses than the Titans.
Right. And I don't think, I mean, I don't think anybody's claiming that the Titans have a great defense.
I think that's what the caller was trying to do when he said, hey, who are the two best defenses left? Well, you know San Francisco is obviously going to be the first one you pick because San Francisco's defense is freaking legit. Green Bay's defense is really good. Like, I think Green Bay's defense is very underrated. And so I would argue that the Titans defense is good, but it's not. I don't think the Titans defense is as good as they've played the last 2 weeks.
Well, those two, what's the similarity between those two defenses, between Green Bay and between San Francisco?
Sacked quarterback.
Rush the quarterback. San Francisco's got four first-rounders. They're coming off that ball like a juggernaut. Green Bay goes out and signs the Smith brothers, and as of last count, they have like 26 sacks between them.
Oh, they sack every quarterback.
So, I mean, if you can knock the quarterback down, now your defense has a chance to be ranked among the elite.
Predators had a nice win Sunday. They take on Edmonton tonight. Hal Gill will join us next. We'll talk to Hal Jarrett, the GM. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app. Jared of the GM tonight. The Predators coming off of their big win at Winnipeg are in Edmonton. They take on the Oilers. That game a little bit later than normal. That game is going to be at 8 o'clock tonight. Preds and Edmonton. Hal Gill joins us now, presented by Puckett's. Hal, new coach comes in. I know he lost the first game against Boston, but that was kind of tough since he was hired that morning. But they go to Chicago and they win, and then they play a great game against Winnipeg. Beautiful play by Yakov Trinan, and the Predators win 1-0 against Winnipeg. Kyle Turris scoring the game-winning goal. Hal, have you noticed a change with the new coach, and what do you think that new change is?
Yeah, of course, anytime a new coach comes in, there's going to be a change in mentality, but there's a lot of little systems changes as well. And, you know, a little bit tighter defensively, there's a focus on protecting the front of the net. And I thought that Winnipeg game was probably the most complete defensive game that they played. You know, John Hines has talked about protecting the front, keeping a D in front of the net at all times, and then getting the puck up to the forwards and playing fast. And I thought they did that. I think the goals are going to come. You know, that was just – Hellebuck was really good in that game. They had more chances than just the one goal. But I thought that was defensively, more importantly than anything, that was the most complete game they've had. So there's a lot more changes to come. I think we're going to see things get tweaked as we go. But so far, so good. The Preds seem to be responding to it.
What do you make of the way the players are interacting with the coach? I mean, I joked last week that when they played last Tuesday, I kind of felt like he was a stepdad trying to parent a kid, where it's like, hey, Jack, do your homework. And he's like, hey, don't talk to me. You're not my real dad. Don't tell me what to do. But obviously he is the real head coach of the Predators. What have the interactions been like between him and the players, both on the ice, and you've been with him on the road off the ice?
I lost you at stepdad, but I think what you're trying to say is that you know, anytime there's a change, it's a new voice, and you know, it takes a while to figure out what that voice is. But from what I've seen from John Hines, he's very honest. He's very black and white in what he's saying, and he says that he's not going to leave gray areas, but he wants players playing a certain way, and he demands that. And in practice, he's detailed, and it's a little adjustment period. I think the players have been very receptive, because it's not certainly not a yelling. It's a teaching. And multiple players have told me on the bench, there's not a lot of yelling and screaming. There's a lot of coaching, coachable moments, and one-on-one interaction, and basically saying, okay, this is what you did. This is what I want you to do. This is how we're going to go about doing it. And I think that's really what the players have voiced to me. And you know, on the ice, it shows. I feel like there is a little bit more of attention to detail. Anytime you have a new voice, there's going to be a heightened focus. And I think that's shown. I think he has their ear, and now they just have to get all the little bits and pieces, all the details have to come together.
Hal, you mentioned playing better defense against Winnipeg. We started the season kind of going from a defensive team to a little bit more emphasis on the offense. And I'm not sure, you know, that we got that completely done. But do you see the emphasis going back to, hey, this is the way that, you know, we've played in the past. This is the way we're headed now.
I think the offense is going to be there. I think the Preds have enough weapons that the offense should be there. It hasn't been clicking. And I think the biggest part about the D-zone structure that they have is that it is going to allow for more offense, especially from the center position. I think you're going to see Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene, Kyle Turris. You know, these guys, Bonino has already been fantastic, and he knows his role. But these other guys are going to get more pucks coming through the neutral zone just by the way they set up the D zone. I think, you know, the center will be shadowing the defenseman, kind of his support, and then he'll be his outlet. And I think if you get Matt Duchene the puck in his zone and allow him to push it through the neutral zone, you're going to see a lot more offense created off of the rush. And Hines has talked about that, making plays off the rush, trying to do misdirection so that you can get to the center of the ice, to get into scoring areas, especially off the rush. So I think they're finding that balance, but right now it's John Hines' defense first. He wants to fix all the defensive holes that they've had, and then they'll go forward and try to create more offense.
What's kind of your gut feel about tonight?
It's the tough one. Anytime you're playing against a guy like Connor McDavid, and I shouldn't say a guy like him. There's not too many like him. He's on a level of his own. He's got Draisaitl with him, and they're on separate lines. McDavid was 71 points, and Draisaitl was 70. So it poses a problem matching up against those guys. You got to keep an eye on. I think McDavid is the real weapon. He's deadly. Every time he touches the puck, becomes a scoring chance. So it's going to be a group of five that have to stop them. And once you stop them, I think the Preds can dominate this team. They can take it over. I don't think Edmonton is as strong as the record shows because of that lopsided McDavid and Draisaitl factor. But let's be honest, they're not easy to stop. So the challenge is going to be there to stop those guys. If they can do it, I like the chances.
Hal Gill's our guest tonight at Edmonton. Edmonton has the last playoff spot. Now, the Preds have three games in hand, but they're 4 points behind Edmonton. As a player, even though there's still a lot of hockey left to be played, do you look at that and say, hey, you win tonight, you'll have three games in hand still, and you will be 2 points behind that team that is in front of you for that last wild card spot, last playoff spot?
Absolutely. It's the fun time of year where you start to, you know, get into watching where that line is. And when you're below the line, there's nothing worse. And anytime you can get closer to that line, that playoff line, it feels a little bit better and you get a little bit more confidence. So I think you're going to see a team that it starts to respond, and every 2 points is huge, especially against the team in front of them. So, I think that was a huge win in Winnipeg because that changes everything. Being down 7 or down 3, that's a big change, and these guys know that. So, this is gut check time. We're getting into it.
So I got to be honest with you. I think, like, tonight's one of those games where I've said to Floyd, I think at some point this team's going to have to win, like, 6 or 7 in a row, and I'm thinking, why not now? And so I just don't want it to break up the momentum of the two wins they had on the road in Chicago and then in Winnipeg. And if you're going to go win 7 in a row or 8 in a row, or like Tampa Bay has 10 in a row, this is when you're going to – these are the kind of games you're going to win. This, Buffalo, the games that are upcoming. So I feel like this is where you got to go on the run, Hal.
Yeah, I would agree with you. But in saying that really, if you try and focus on going on a run, then you just get way ahead of yourself. I think right now where the team is at, they need to take it shift by shift and focus on what they're supposed to be doing. If they lose a game but play well, you know, like if they you know, some things happen. It's not going to be perfect. You set up a good game plan and you execute and you don't get that win, it shouldn't burst your bubble. And that's where the Preds have had trouble is you know, not just the one or two losses, but the three and four, and then it starts to creep in. That's what they have to avoid. And if they go throughout the year without losing two games in a row, I think they'll be all right. That being said, you know, if you get on a little bit of a run and you start putting them all together and you start streaking, it makes it a lot easier coming down the stretch.
Hal Gill with us, presented by Puckett's. Do the Titans beat the Chiefs on Sunday in Arrowhead? Your thoughts?
I have to think they will. I just feel like they're every time someone says, they don't have this, they go out and they prove it. They have the running game. They have big plays. I do think they pull it off. I think the defensive scheme that Vrabel and the boys are coming up with, so far they've been looking pretty good. So I see continued success, and I like them. I'll say, do I have to give a number? Do you want a number? What
sure.
Do you want? You want me to just throw it out there? I'll go 35-27.
Oh, I like it.
35-27. Hal Gill, as always, presented by Puckett's tonight on the call with the voice of the Nashville Predators, Pete Weber, at 8 o'clock against Edmonton. Harold, we will see you later this week. Have a safe flight home. Are y'all coming home tonight after the game?
We better, because I can't spend another night in Edmonton. It's minus 35 right now.
Woo!
Minus 35. I didn't make that up. You can't make up that kind of cold.
Ooh. Sounds fun.
Get me out of here.
See ya. We'll see ya, Hal.
Thanks, Hal.
See you guys.
Hal Gill joining us again, presented by Puckett's. What do you think of Hal's score prediction right there? Titans 35, Kansas
sure,
City 27.
We'll
How many games this year has Kansas City played where they only scored 27 points?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm about to look that up. I can't believe that with Mahomes that they have scored 27. I bet they've scored more than 27 in every game he's played. I mean, I think they've – let's see. Kansas City schedule. Here you go. All right. Jacksonville week one, they scored 40. Oakland week two, they only scored 28. Baltimore week three, 33, 34 against Detroit. They only scored 13 against Indianapolis. Now, remember, that's when Mahomes hurt his ankle and Indianapolis held the ball for like 38 minutes or something crazy in terms of time of possession. They scored, they only scored 24 against Houston. They scored 30 in a win against Denver, 24 against Green Bay, although that was without Mahomes. They only scored 26 against Minnesota. They scored 32 against you, 24 against the Chargers. 23 against New England, 23 against – okay, so they've scored less than 27 points like six times this year. Maybe Hal's on to something.
Who knows?
You don't feel very optimistic
Let's
about –
Let's hope. No, heck, I hope he's right.
But, again, I said you don't feel very optimistic about Hal's prediction, do you?
I think they'll probably score a little bit more than that.
Maybe so not. Then the Titans have to if what – give me a – later in the week, give me a number that the Titans have to get to. Later in the week, both time of possession and points. But we'll have to do it later in the week because Predators game day is next. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
Live from the Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's game day in Smashville, brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes and Geno's East. What are John Hines' keys to the game? Who will be in and out of the lineup? It's time to break it all down on Jared and the GM on your flagship home of Smashville.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Predators Game Day is presented by TJ Anderson Homes. Your road to Nashville area real estate begins with my friend TJ Anderson online at tjandersonhomes.com and Geno's East. Get a historic slice of Chicago deep dish tradition before or after the game. Geno's East on the corner of 3rd and Korean Vets. Info at genoseast.com/Nashville. Tonight at Edmonton, Floyd. And we just talked about it with Hal Gill. Coming into this game, Edmonton has 35 games left. They have 53 points. That's good for the last wild card spot in the Western Conference. The Predators, meanwhile, have 38 games left. And they come in 4 points behind Edmonton for that last wild card spot. A win today would keep your three games in hand buffer, but would only have you 2 games out of that final wild card spot.
It's what we're looking for. Give us that chance.
I mean, can you imagine? This is going to sound crazy. Can you imagine if John Hines gets this team to the playoffs? I mean, everybody tells us this team has the talent. if this team gets into the playoffs, could they pull a Titans? And all of a sudden, we're sitting here, the Western Conference Final with John Hines as the coach?
I don't. I mean, I expect him to make the playoffs. I mean, maybe I'm crazy.
Did you think, like, after the Winter Classic, did you think this team was going to make the playoffs?
Oh, I'm not sure, but, I mean, I didn't think they were playing. No, I didn't like the way they played, but I didn't think, oh, they're done, you know, pitch it in. I think they'll find a way to pull it out.
Oh, I was so ready to pitch it in.
Yeah.
I know you're going to say, oh, that's you. That's what you like to do. I know that. But I'm telling you, I'm still not ready to say that the Predators are going to get to the playoffs and then make a run. I mean, I'm still skeptical. You know, I'd like to see more than two games. I mean, it feels like this season they've gone on little stretches where we think, oh, are they getting out of the woods? And then they subsequently do not get out of the woods.
Well, I didn't go on the run part. I just said make the playoffs.
At this point,
what they do with them will be, you know, up to them.
At this point, I will settle for one playoff round out of court. I mean, I would really prefer to, because once you get to the second round, you know, people don't understand this about how the radio works, but once you get into the middle of May, you know, you're going to have to gut it out, but you feel pretty good about, you know, setting yourself up for the summer. You get knocked out in that first round, and you're looking at it like, man, no Titans, no Preds after the NFL draft until training camp in July. I would prefer that the Predators go to the Stanley Cup Final, that end in seven games on like June 13th. And then, you know, we'll take a couple weeks off and SEC Media Day's right around the corner. That's what I would prefer. But then again, nobody ever asked me.
No.
Even though they should. No. But that's what I'm saying with that. Time now to take a look at John Hines' Keys to the Game. John Hines' Keys to the Game presented by TJ Anderson Homes. Buy or sell your home with my friend TJ Anderson. Again, your road to Nashville area real estate begins at tjandersonhomes.com. And the key with Edmonton is that he knows a little bit about him because, well, he's already coached against him this year.
Well, I think special teams is a real big part of the game. Obviously, Edmonton's power play is number one in the league, and I think 36% at home, so that's big. They're top 10 in penalty kill, so that's going to be a challenging element to the game. You have to be concerned with Dreisaitl and McDavid, but I think, you know, they're playing a real solid team game. They're difficult to play against, and you know, we know we're going to have our hands full. I think it's been beneficial. I've actually been able to at least seen them, although our players haven't. You can give them some feedback on the experiences I've had with them this year.
So that was what he said about, hey, I've got experience against them, and he goes into the Edmonton game with that, or goes into the Edmonton game tonight with at least a little bit of experience against Edmonton this year, which I think is probably a good thing. It looks like Pekka-Rinne will probably be in net today against Edmonton. UC Saros had the win against Winnipeg the other night, although remember the old Barry Trotz rule, and I don't know if John Hines subscribes to this or doesn't, but if you pitch a shutout, you go the next night. Saros coming off of a 1-0 shutout. Maybe Hines does pull that card. That I'm not sure of. Taking a look at the standings. Again, I think we have to understand that the Predators are going to have to be one of these two wild cards unless they just get scorching hot. The Predators are going to have to be one of these two wild card teams, and they're going to have to probably, you know, maybe end up in the Pacific end of the bracket. But the Blues lead the Central Division 67 points, although the Predators have three games in hand on them. Dallas 56, Colorado 55, the Jets 52, and then there are the Preds at 49. What's crazy is a great 2 weeks is really the only difference between you right now and you in second place. Now, good luck catching St. Louis. They almost have 20 more points than you. But everything else, I think, is on the table. Floyd tonight, right here for the Predators, going up against Edmonton. Again, Edmonton controls the last Western Conference playoff spot. The Predators are 4 points behind with three games in hand. A win today would keep it three games in hand, but they'd be 2 points behind Edmonton for that final spot. Right there in the mix, it would be three in a row on the road trip under John Hines. What are you watching for tonight?
You know, I think we talked to Hal. I like the little bit of emphasis it seems like might be putting back on the defense. UC Saros had probably his best game, you know, of this year, maybe for a while. The last game with a shutout. Whoever's in goal tonight, I think I'm looking forward to see if that defense can help them out a little bit more and maybe we know that this team has some offensive firepower, and we're going to have to play good defense, and the goalie's going to have to be outstanding.
I feel like I'm looking at more zone schemes with this defense as opposed to kind of Peter wanting to go, you know, match up men in the defensive zone. Well, don't lose Connor McDavid, and don't lose Draisaitl, and don't lose those guys for Edmonton.
They're good.
But I think this is a big game for the Predators. I mean, I think this is a game where all of a sudden you win this, and all of a sudden you think, you know what, this team can legitimately make the playoffs. And as we know with hockey, you get hot at the right time of the year, all you got to do is make the playoffs, and just like the Titans, maybe you find yourself deep on a playoff
just run. Get invited to the dance. That's all you want.
That's going to do it for us. Predators Insiders is coming up next. Ryan Porth and Adam Vingan will be breaking down the John Hines era. Preds Insiders, followed by pregame, followed by puck drop. Jared of the GM, we'll see you. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.